Welcome to JFK Spotlight on Health. This is where we highlight the groundbreaking work being done at JFK Medical Center in Edison, part of the Hackensack Meridian Health Network. Hackensack Meridian Health, keep getting better. We'd like to welcome Dr. Divya Gupta, sleep medicine specialist at the Center for Sleep Disorders at JFK Neuroscience Institute in Edison. We'll talk about treatment, research, all the sleep services offered at JFK. Good morning, doctor.
Good morning, Joel.
Thank you for joining us on the program and taking the time.
My pleasure.
I'd like to start each show. You know, I have a different guest every show, and I'd like to start with getting to know our guest a little bit. So if you don't mind, if you could tell us a little bit about you, you know, what was your path that led you to where you are today at JFK Hackensack?
So I am a neurologist by training, and I did fellowship training in sleep medicine. Mm-hmm. And then I have been practicing clinical sleep medicine here at JFK in Edison for 15 plus years. And I've had the good fortune of training sleep medicine fellows as a training program at our center for physicians who want to train further in this field.
Okay.
And I've also had the pleasure of working with very experienced colleagues in neurology and neurosurgery at the JFK Neuroscience Institute.
Okay, so you train other doctors who are learning to do what you do, is it correct?
Exactly.
Okay,
yes.
Great. So you have to know what you're doing with that, right?
Well, I think that sleep disorders are, under-recognized, not just in the community, but amongst physicians as well. And there's a great need for physician awareness about sleep disorders so they can further help their patients who can be diagnosed and treated.
So even if they don't specialize in what you specialize in, it's good for them to know a lot about it. So,
absolutely,
yeah.
Because I think primary care physicians are the first line providers who see patients with symptoms like snoring or daytime sleepiness or restless sleep, and they could get their antennas up and ask them some more questions and then refer patients for further evaluation to sleep clinics or for a sleep study if needed.
So you said snoring and a couple other of the symptoms. Are there a wide array of symptoms, or is it just a handful that kind of make it obvious as to why someone might have a sleep disorder?
So that's a good question. So sleep disorders can affect people at any age in their lifetime, and the presentations can be different. But most commonly what we see in middle-aged folks, especially men, is disturbances of breathing in sleep. Which is snoring or stoppage of breathing in sleep or morning tiredness or headaches or daytime sleepiness. So that is a condition that could be a warning sign of sleep apnea. And if untreated, it can lead to other adverse effects like high blood pressure, heart disease, or even a risk for stroke. So that's one of the common conditions. And the other condition that we commonly see is difficulty falling asleep or staying asleep at night, which is more likely to affect women, especially after middle age. So we call that insomnia. So that is another common condition in the population. And moving to pediatric age group, these days, the invasiveness of electronic devices in people's social life and even in the bedroom environment. So excessive use of electronic devices, staying up late, can cause a lot of sleep disturbances and performance issues in adolescents. And in younger children, there can be other problems like, stalling at bedtime or, behavioral problems related to sleep. So there's a whole array of sleep disorders depending upon the age group, and a specialized sleep clinic like we have at JFK is able to offer assessment for all different age groups. We also have a pediatric sleep specialist here and able to offer treatments for all various types of symptoms.
So you did mention sleep apnea, which you said is more prevalent in middle-aged men, I believe, you said.
Correct.
So what, everybody's heard, well, I shouldn't say everybody, but most people have heard of sleep apnea, but what exactly is it? I know they have trouble sleeping and they need usually some sort of breathing device.
That's very true, Joel. So sleep apnea, as the name suggests, is episodes of stoppage of breathing in sleep. And it can show up as snoring or, a choking sensation or a gasping sensation in sleep. And oftentimes it is a patient's bed partner who is more aware of their labored breathing in sleep than
that's
the patient,
right.
himself or herself.
Yeah.
So what the patient may experience is difficulty waking up in the morning or feeling tired in the morning despite sleeping 7-8 hours at night. And of course, sleepiness while driving to work or in the afternoon during meetings and so on. So that is a very common problem.
So they don't know that they are their breathing stops in the middle of the night, right? They have
correct.
No, they're
and
not aware of that.
It keeps up on them over the years, so they just get used to it, and they think this is just them. So often we get patients in our clinic who have had history of breathing problems and sleep for 10, 15 years. So it's very unfortunate because had they come earlier, they could have been diagnosed and treated, like you said, with the help of a breathing machine at night, which we call CPAP machine. And that would have gotten them better sleep and much better quality of life in the daytime.
Are there other alternatives other than the machine?
So CPAP machine is still the gold standard of treatment, and it is non-invasive, and it is effective for all shades of gray of sleep apnea. So it is covered by most insurance plans. So it still remains the most popular treatment. However, it's not for everybody. Sometimes people have difficulty getting used to the feel of the mask on the face at night. Mm-hmm. Sometimes they have difficulty tolerating the pressure sensation in the nose and the mouth with the air coming in. So for a certain subset of those patients, there may be other alternatives available that do not involve wearing a mask or using a machine at night. So I'm happy to share with you that at JFK Medical Center, we offer the latest technologies in treatment of sleep apnea for patients who have had difficulty tolerating CPAP. So the treatment with implantable devices, like a hypoglossal neurostimulator, that is also available at JFK.
Okay, so there are many other things. And we'll give a contact number at the end of the interview so they can contact you. Talking with Dr. Gupta, sleep medicine specialist at JFK Neuroscience Institute in Edison. Now you also mentioned having trouble falling asleep. I mean, we've all had trouble falling asleep from time to time. But some people, and I know my mother, who is now 84, she hardly ever sleeps at night. And even though she's very tired during the day because she doesn't sleep a lot at night, she still has, she might get a half hour nap here and there. What causes that? Why, as you get older?
So that's a good question, Joel. And, you know, it's obvious that you're concerned about your loved ones. Mm-hmm. And so as the age advances, our quality of sleep changes. So people may not sleep as long as they did in their younger days. They may only get 6 hours of sleep, whereas previously they would get a solid 8 hours. And then the sleep may not be that deep and refreshing. So oftentimes older patients do need to take a catch-up nap in the afternoon, which is fine. I mean, there are cultures which promote an afternoon siesta. So there's a healthy way of taking a nap if you want to troubleshoot, daytime sleepiness because of light sleep at night. And we advise patients on how to build a nap schedule into their day. And also we look at what could be causing patients to perhaps have lighter sleep at night. So older age group, there could be other factors like medications on board that could be affecting the quality of sleep. Certainly sleep apnea can show up at any age group, especially as the age advances. Also, there are movement disorders of sleep that can creep in older age group, especially in women, called restless leg syndrome, which can also affect the quality of sleep at night. And then medical conditions, if somebody has congestive heart failure or somebody has asthma, then those conditions may start becoming symptomatic as the night progresses and also cause them to wake up and not have a deep sleep. And then lastly is psychological factors, right? If something weighing on your mind, if something is bothering you or there's been a sudden change in your routine or any thing that is unusually stressful could knock off your sleep as well. So when we see patients for insomnia in our sleep clinic, we do a comprehensive evaluation. We look for all these contributory factors. We would do a sleep study to make sure there's nothing arising out of sleep itself that could be lightening up their sleep. Mm-hmm. And then finally, if it is felt to be mostly from psychological factors, we do refer them for help with behavioral therapy for insomnia or cognitive behavioral therapy, which has been shown to be very effective for this condition.
Yeah, so you mentioned having trouble falling asleep. A lot of people just lay in bed with their eyes open. Their mind is racing. Is there anything they can try initially themselves, something to prevent that from happening, just to get their mind to rest so they can fall asleep?
Excellent question. So So I think that creating a space for the mind to achieve a relaxed state before going to bed may be helpful, what we call a transition time or wind down.
Mm-hmm.
So I think all of us are kind of, you know, working hard during the day. We're on the go, we are planning, and we're doing household chores. And then somehow going to bed and trying to sleep, the mind doesn't just switch off. So just planning some wind down routine, something that relaxes the mind before going to bed, may be helpful in that transition. And that could be reading or listening to music, even talking on the phone with a friend,
mm-hmm.
or just making a to-do list ahead of time before going to bed, so you're not mulling over it during your sleep time. All those would be helpful. I would caution against using iPad or cell phone devices soon before bedtime, because they shine light into the eyes, and that can knock off your body's natural melatonin production, which is a sleep inducer.
Okay.
So using electronic devices at bedtime can actually delay sleep onset. And likewise, if you're watching a TV show that is relaxing, that may be fine. But if you're watching a lot of crime news or something that gets you anxious about the world situation, that may also delay sleep onset. So one takeaway is definitely plan a transition time before going to bed. And the other is good old exercise. So exercise in the early evening hours has been shown to be very helpful in promoting sleep at bedtime. So I wouldn't recommend exercise, vigorous exercise, within 4 hours of going to bed.
Mm-hmm.
But certainly early evening exercise has been found to be very helpful. And then third thing that people can try is trying to go to bed closer to the time they actually fall asleep. And that would minimize the lead time lying in bed, just feeling frustrated and watching the clock, trying to go to sleep.
Right.
Because
feeling the pressure.
The bed should be used for sleep only. And one should minimize time spent awake in bed, you know, just tossing and turning, trying to sleep, because we don't want the bed to become associated with lack of sleep in our subconscious mind. We want it to have a strong association with sleep.
Right. Got a lot of good points there. And the point you made about, you know, watching a television show that would excite you. Like if I watch a sports, you know, whether a baseball game, football game, and it's a close game, I feel that. Like, it
you
will
feel
end.
Adrenaline rush. You're ready to go.
Yeah, I'm like excited. I'm like, oh, you know, it ended, whether it ended in an exciting way, whether we win or lose, I'm wide awake after that game. So, yeah.
There you go.
Absolutely true. Absolutely true. All right. So, how has the pandemic affected some of your patients? Like, how has the pandemic come into play as far as, I don't know, making things worse for your current patients or bringing in new patients because of it?
Yeah, so certainly, you know, from the lens of the healthcare environment, the pandemic brought in a surge of patients with the COVID disease, and it took a toll on the healthcare workers who were taking care of these patients, and then a lot of times these patients would not make it through. So, you know, for the ICU teams, the nurses, the doctors who spent, long hours trying to revive or salvage a patient, losing that patient was very, very distressing.
Yeah.
And over time, just the fatigue of seeing this surge of patients also took a toll on healthcare workers. So certainly sleep disturbances amongst the nursing staff, amongst the physicians has been reported. And our HMH network provided a lot of support through the Occupational Health Department and the Integrative Health Services Department for psychological support and you know, mental health services for all the employees. So I'm speaking in general for the general population.
Mm-hmm.
You know, data has now been published about surveys that were done during the height of the pandemic. And, you know, there's a study by Mandelkorn that studied almost 2,000 adults in the U.S., and they found that 40% patients or surveyors reported worsening of their sleep disturbances because of the pandemic. And about 20% of surveyors reported increased use of sleeping pills.
Ooh.
So what they found is that amongst the responders to the survey, if someone lost their job or was in the working age group, 31 to 45 years age group, or they were quarantined at home and because of that were not physically active, or female gender, these factors were more likely to be associated with the worsening of sleep quality during the pandemic. So those are the things to watch for.
Now, you mentioned sleeping pills. In my mind, I don't like the sound of that. Is it safe to take sleeping pills? I mean, obviously, you don't want to take them every night your whole life. What's your feeling on sleeping pills in general?
So sleeping pills are a Band-Aid situation,
right?
It may be beneficial initially for short-term use, but oftentimes it starts losing efficacy with long-term use because the root problem of the mind racing at night or the anxiety is not being addressed.
Okay.
And that is better addressed by cognitive behavioral therapy approach. So sleeping pills, the double-edged sword that they are, is initially they may help, but then when they don't, people start doubling up on doses or start combining sleep aids, and that's when they run into trouble with side effects like sleepwalking at night or confused behaviors or even worsening of breathing problems in sleep. So that is the problem with the sleeping pills.
So to be clear, not recommended.
So we don't usually recommend them because they can be habit forming, and ultimately they are not helpful in the long run.
Yeah, when you said it was a Band-Aid, it reminded me of, I had an interview a couple of weeks ago about headaches, and it's the same thing. People would take the ibuprofen or whatever they take for a headache, and then it would become more and more and more, and that's the exact term that they used, was a Band-Aid. There's still pain there. You're just masking it, and in this case, you still have a sleeping disorder. You're just masking it with the sleeping pills.
Correct.
Correct?
So that's a very good analogy that you gave there, Joel. So they can be habit-forming and not helpful, so it's best to avoid getting into that trap with sleeping pills.
Okay, so when do you know when there is a problem? When do you have to, obviously, if I can't fall asleep tonight, I'm not going to, run to you. But at what point should I be like, oh, you know what, I think I should get this checked out?
So usually if you're having, poor nights of sleep, more than twice a week, and it is going on for longer time, like more than 2 or 3 months, I think you should bring it to the attention of your primary care physician. And they may do the initial, evaluation with you, what could have changed with your medicines or your routine that may be contributing to that problem.
Mm-hmm.
And often one can identify some significant, stressor or factor. And if not, then they can certainly refer to a sleep clinic, and then we can take it from there.
And how does it begin? Let's say I call, I make an appointment, I come in. What's the initial appointment like?
So we are a comprehensive sleep center, which means that we have a sleep lab, which I think most people are aware of, is there for overnight sleep studies. But in addition to that, we have a sleep clinic. So we have physicians here who can see you by appointment and take your history, assess your symptoms, and order the right kind of sleep study for you. Then, in addition, after reading your sleep study, they can meet with you and go over your test results and come up with a treatment plan for the condition that you have. So, and like I mentioned, we provide service for a wide variety of sleep disorders and all age groups of patients. And we have the latest technology of services available as well. So that's how the whole process plays out.
Okay, so what happens during a sleep study? Like, do patients sleep there? Do they still sleep at home? Like, how does that work?
So a sleep study, as the name suggests, is an overnight outpatient test which is done in the sleep lab.
Okay.
And our sleep lab is located within the JFK Hospital. Even though it's an outpatient test, the lab itself is located inside the hospital. And we create a bedroom-like setting for the patient. So it doesn't look like a hospital room. It looks more like a home environment.
Oh, that's
fine. There's an attached bathroom for the patient to use.
Mm-hmm.
And the techs are watching from the control room. They apply the sensors. And there's no needles, nothing invasive. It's all adhesive sensors.
Okay.
And they monitor the patient from the tech room. And basically, when you arrive, you do the patient intake questionnaires. And, you relax. You go to sleep. They wake you up in the morning. They remove the sensors, offer you breakfast here, and you're ready to go. And for the convenience of our patients who are working, the lab is also open on weekends. So it is possible to do a Friday night study or Saturday night study, which are our most popular nights.
Right. So what about if people aren't sleeping? That's why they're coming to you. Do they come there and then sometimes not sleep? And then
So So a lot of times, people with insomnia and even otherwise, people with other sleep disorders, they may have difficulty sleeping in an unfamiliar environment, which we understand. But usually after, it may take them longer, but usually people do fall asleep. And then at that point, we can assess their sleep disorder.
Okay. Is there ever a time where surgery is involved?
So typically, depending upon their sleep disorder and their diagnosis, the surgical part may come in if it's a child who has, snoring at night or labored breathing and is having some hyperactive behaviors during the daytime or inattentiveness in class. So surgical treatment options like tonsillectomy may be indicated for children with sleep apnea. And then turn the page, coming to adults, surgical treatment options may be indicated if they have bony deviation in their nose, what we call a deviated septum, or they have the need for an implantable device. Generally, the treatments are moving away from throat surgery for treatment of sleep apnea in adults because they found that those kind of procedures did not bring relief to most patients, nor did they have a lasting benefit. So there is a limited role of surgical options in the world of sleep disorders.
But obviously, that's not your first. If nothing else works,
correct. Yeah. Correct. So surgery is usually not the first resort, but as a second line.
Yeah, if it's needed. Mm-hmm. Can you give a story of a patient that was just a very unique case? You're laughing. So, there's got to be something there.
I just saw him last week, actually, and he has volunteered to be our CPAP coach for other patients.
Wow.
So this patient was referred to us by his cardiologist after he had a heart attack at a young age. And his occupation is a chef, so you can see it's a very high-paced and stressful environment. And also because food is everywhere, you do tend to sample and eat. And so he had gained weight. And because of stress, he was smoking. And he landed up with a heart attack in the hospital. And then his cardiologist saw that in the hospital during night, his oxygen levels were fluctuating in his sleep and he was snoring loudly. So he was referred to our sleep clinic for evaluation. And then he had a sleep study which did show severe degree of sleep apnea. And he was having episodes of stoppage of breathing at night, like multiple times every hour. So we recommended him to wear a CPAP machine. Now, when he received the CPAP machine at home, he started out the night with it, but then woke up after 4 or 5 hours in a panic and just ripped the mask off. And he was really hoping this treatment would work, but was initially very distressed that he would not be able to tolerate it. And he didn't want to have his heart be stressed out with sleep apnea at night and have another heart attack. So he was kind of in a rock and a hard place, what to do. So he followed up at our clinic. We worked with him. We found a different mask for him that he was able to tolerate. And we gently desensitized him to the CPAP use that we said, wear it for however many hours you can, and we'll gradually increase the pressure. And now he's like a poster child for sleep apnea. His usage is the best that we have seen amongst patients. He's using it 100% of the time if you look at his data from the last 1 month, and he's using it with good efficacy. There is not much mask leak, and his sleep apnea score is really well controlled. And most importantly, he feels so much better.
Yeah, I was going to ask you that.
He has so much more energy and alertness at his job, and he's reassured that his body is getting enough oxygen at night in his sleep, and he's reducing his risk of having another heart attack. So he's really one of our remarkable success stories.
That is a great story. And did he quit smoking?
And he quit smoking.
Great.
He's very attentive to his health, and he is going to be our CPAP coach for other patients who are struggling with the CPAP treatment.
That's fantastic. Dr. Divya Gupta, sleep medicine specialist at the Center for Sleep Disorders at JFK Neuroscience Institute in Edison. Thank you very much for everything that you've shared and for being on the show.
Thank you, Joel. It was a pleasure. Thank you.
There you go. If you want more info, please go to HackensackMeridianHealth.org or you can call 732-321-7010, option 2. That's HackensackMeridianHealth.org or 732-321-7010, option 2. For a podcast of this broadcast, go to FoxSportsRadioNewJersey.com. This has been JFK Spotlight on Health, brought to you by Hackensack Meridian Health. Keep getting better. I'm Joel Katz, and I'll see you next week.